A seminar on how to go back to Godhead. So after my seminar, one devotee came up to me. I'll never forget it in my whole life. He said, "Wow, now I can really understand how all the leaders of ISKCON represent different aspects of Srila Prabhupada." There was a, you know, kind of theory going around like that. And he said, "Just like Satchinandan Maharaj, he's just like a rose." And he said, "You're just like a good businessman." And I said, "Gee, thanks." So anyway, this year I'm back. The businessman is back. But I have a little bit more spiritual subject to talk about. We're going to discuss the Bhagavad Gita as it is. And we had planned on 5 days, 6 days rather, but it's due to not having the seven habits down. We've lost a day, but anyway, we'll try to make up for that. The first day tomorrow, I'm going to give a little introduction to the Bhagavad Gita by way of the genealogy. Giant word there for you. Everybody know what genealogy is? Everybody knows, right? Okay. Genealogy means your family tree, and I don't mean your apple tree or your pear tree. Or it means who your father and your father's father and his father, etc. Mothers do. And so we'll give a little introduction what led up to the fratricidal war of the Bhagavad Gita. And if I really take off, we could just discuss the whole 6 days on Mahabharata, because that's full of sex and violence, which, you know, that's what we all love. But, at least not we, the materialists, of course. So we'll have a little introduction, and then over the next 4 days, I have broken the second chapter. I'm speaking on the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. It was Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He described the second chapter as a summary of the whole Bhagavad Gita. And I suppose that's why Srila Prabhupada called his second chapter the contents of the Gita summarized. The main theme for the first day, verses 1 through 13, will be when one comes to the realization that there is no shelter in this material world, including his own intelligence, his own mind, at that time, he's ready to take shelter of a spiritual authority. As long as you're thinking that there's some way that I don't have to surrender to Krishna or his representative, then you won't be inclined to find any shelter. So that'll be the first day. The second day, we'll be discussing verses 13 through 30. This main theme will be the spirit soul is eternal and indestructible, while material nature is temporary. Because of this, one should not be bewildered by the inevitable destruction of the material body. One should remain fixed in prescribed duties which purify and allow one to realize the eternal self. Now, this is after Arjuna has become a disciple. And then Krishna gets heavy. He chastises Arjuna, and Then he instructs them on the nature of the soul, Krishna's teachings on the basic teachings on the nature of the soul. Then the next chapter is Karma Kanda. It's very, very interesting how Krishna, first of all, he argues with Arjuna, or he enlightens Arjuna, rather, on the nature of the soul. So that's a positive spiritual argument. But then Krishna takes a totally different angle, a different track, as we say, and he starts arguing from a material point of view, that even if there is no soul, once in San Francisco, Srila Prabhupada at 518 Frederick Street, right in the heart of hippie land. Some of you may have heard of Haight Ashbury, which was the heart of San Francisco hippie world. So our temple was right in the center on Frederick Street. And it was a little small temple about half the size of, or one quarter of this temple, a little bigger than one quarter of this temple. And so Srila Prabhupada was in the temple. It was a storefront. Right next door was the Hell's Angels storefront. They had their little office there. Quite a place. And so Prabhupada was sitting on his Vyasasan one day. And there were a lot of Indians in San Francisco, so one day, this was in 1968, an Indian walked into the temple. He looked around at the photos. You know, Prabhupada was chanting his japa. He looked around at the photos on the wall and the carpet on the floor, and then he walked up to Prabhupada and started talking, and they had a little talk. And then the man said, well, Swamiji, all of this is very nice, but what if you're wrong? What if there is no God? And Prabhupada said, that's all right. It's a nice way to live anyway. So anyway, Krishna argues, the main theme is material happiness comes from proper execution of one's dharma, one's duty. And neglect of dharma brings your material downfall. Frankly, I've seen this in India. I've seen very, very big business people, the Soroses, the Rockefellers, the Hunts, the Rothschilds of India in my preaching. And they're very, very dedicated to their duty. They may or may not be spiritualists, but they're very regulated, and materially, they're happy. They do everything in a very regulated way, and even their eating habits are very regulated. Even the amount of food they eat, they're very self-controlled. They're successful materially, and they're relatively materially happy. So anyway, Krishna argues from that point of view. Then the next section is 29 verses 39 through 53. Krishna describes this as Buddhi Yoga. And there's a lot of talk about Buddhi Yoga in the second chapter. Prabhupada also equates Buddhi Yoga with Bhakti Yoga, because Buddhi means intelligence, and acting in pure intelligence means serving Krishna. So the theme is one's consciousness determines the bondage of an activity, not the activity itself. One will remain free from bondage if his actions are guided by a conception of the eternal spiritual self. So this is a very, very interesting statement, because people always want to know what's right, you know, and what's wrong. And then there's a whole gray area in between right and wrong, black, white, and then gray. But the Bhagavad Gita gives a very clear and absolute definition of what is right and what is wrong. And it has to do not with the activity itself, but the consciousness in which the activity is performed. So, to me, that is one of the most interesting aspects of the Bhagavad Gita in relation to our lives, what it can mean for us, how we should live in this world and be spiritually conscious. And then the last section is verses 54 through 72. Stitta pragya, fight, become fixed in Krishna consciousness. This section is, it's almost amazing how we read Bhagavad Gita and we do so in a relatively superficial way. We don't think, what does this word mean? You know, Prabhupada said that if someone gets his book and if he reads only one word, his life could be changed. Every word of the Bhagavad Gita or transcendental literature is potent and purifying. And in this section, Arjuna asked Krishna, Stitta pragyasya kabasha samadhistasya keshava prabhasheta kimas stitta pragyasthita di kim prabhasheta kimasita brajeta kim. And he asked four questions. How does a buddhi yogi speak? How does he sit? How does he walk? What are his symptoms? How can I judge him? So we'll go into that. I kind of really like it because it's the first time that I went through it deeply, it made me realize that I wasn't reading my Bhagavad Gita seriously enough. And so I hope that we'll be able to get through. I'm staying until Saturday evening, leaving Sunday morning. I'd like everyone who comes to my seminar, there may be a few of you, two or three or something, to bring your Bhagavad Gitas. It helps when you're doing a seminar on the Bhagavad Gita. And I'd like you also to bring some notepaper, a notepad, because you know what? What you hear, you remember about 17% of it. Maybe 17.5, I don't know. That is just a statistic based on studies. But if you write down what you hear, if you take notes, that'll increase your retention, what you retain, what you remember. It'll increase that to around 35-40%, a huge jump. And if you read those notes over again within the next 24 hours, you can remember up to 41%. No. You can remember, these are statistics, you know. What's his name, that American poet, what's his name? I didn't write his name down, I can't remember. Autobiography, I have his book there. Mark Twain, he was famous. He said there are lies, you know, lies, I tell a lie. There are lies, there are damn lies, and then there are statistics. So, anyway, statistics say that if you read your notes, you can remember up to 70 or 80%. And then, if you follow what you took down, you can even go back to Godhead. Okay. So, 5:30 sharp. Anyone who's late gets 5 demerits. and the fails the course. And I don't like people being late, actually, because it's you're on a train of thought, and 15 people walk in and then sit down for 10 minutes and walk out. It really disturbs a speaker. You've got to have a little compassion. If you want to go to someone's seminar, then you should have the decency, the culture to be on time or a little before time and plan to stay the whole seminar, even if, you sleep the whole seminar. I'd rather you slept the whole seminar in the back than to walk out. Okay.